today on The Journey from Steve DeWitt.
Our lives that we are living today are creating a context for reward and joy in eternity. So what's the point? It's the same point as last week. Don't waste your life.
First John 2 tells us not to love the world or anything in the world, for the world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. Today on The Journey, Pastor Steve DeWitt encourages believers to prioritize serving Christ wholeheartedly, forsaking trivial pursuits. It's the conclusion of a message titled, Eternal Rewards, Living for Maximum Joy. And you can access the complete message online at thejourney.fm. Now, if you have your Bible, let's join Pastor Steve in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 15.
Now, I've been asked the question, do we just serve the Lord for the rewards that are in it? And I would say to that, no. The Bible talks about a number of proper motives for serving the Lord, and I would just like to walk through some of them to give a broader context for why we do what we do. Here's one. We serve Jesus because he told us to, or what I call here duty or obedience. Why do we obey Christ? Because I love him and because he loves me. And this is why the greatest commandment is so key in following Christ, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. The last thing that we're trying to cultivate here in our church family is a kind of ritualistic, duty-bound following of Christ. No, it is a love following. It is a passion and affection where we want to do what he wants because we love him. That is a very biblical motive. How's your love today? The third one is, this just follows, to please God. Paul writes that we make it our aim to please him, 2 Corinthians 5:9. In fact, interestingly enough, verse 9 is right before verse 10, which I just quoted. He goes from the aim to please God to the fact that we all must stand before the judgment seat of Christ. But if you love somebody, you want to please them, don't you? And then a fourth one, and this is the one we're talking about, is reward. Reward. Now, I got the question, does doing something for reward strip it of its, like, virtue? And perhaps some of us are struggling with this concept that I would serve the Lord with a view towards the reward that he is going to give me. Apparently not, because why else would God fill the New Testament with all of these verses telling us to lay up treasure in heaven and to promise us that he will reward us 100 times as much if we leave father or brother or homes and all the rest? Why would God do that if it strips it of its virtue? So apparently it doesn't. It adds to the rest of these motivations for serving him. Eternity is not going to be the same for everyone. There will be some with reward, and there will be some that are not. Now, in saying that, here's the dilemma. Everyone is completely happy. And see, now this is a thorny paradox, isn't it? How is everybody completely happy, and yet some are more happy? Revelation 2:26, the one who conquers and who keeps my works until the end, to him I will give authority over the nations. And then Revelation 22, verses 4 and 5. They will see his face. This is, by the way, the last description at the end of Revelation describing what eternity is going to be like. So if you're a Christian here, this is our future. Here's what it says. They will see his face, and that's going to be great. And his name will be on their foreheads, and night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. So somehow, and again, we approach this with humility, but somehow the rewards that these treasures, these rewards that God is promising to us will mean various levels of distinction and honor in eternity. Some will have great honor, some will not. And somehow in that, we are going to reign with Christ. Remember, this is an application message, our third message on this passage. I have another illustration of how this works. I've written a short story that I would like to read to you that illustrates what we're talking about here. There once was a master who owned a very large estate. His estate was located close to a debtor's prison. The prison was for those whose debts were so large they could not repay them. Over the years, the master hired servants for his estate from the debtor's prison by personally paying off their debts. He would give them a home on his estate and a job suited to their skills. He gave all his servants the same opportunity to work and labor in the sprawling estate. He provided for all their needs and told them that they would all be rewarded for their faithful work someday. Word around the place was that the master was going to permanently leave the estate. Nobody knew for sure or what that would mean. The other important figure at the estate was the master's son. The master loved his son very much. This was obvious throughout the estate because it was filled with portraits and pictures and paintings of the master's son. Everyone on the estate knew the son, and the son knew them. Every day he walked the grounds, greeted the servants, and tried to encourage them in their work. Then one day, as had been rumored, the master and his son permanently left the estate. After all this time, the workers were eager to discover what their reward would be. His lawyer gathered all the workers to tell them what the master's final wishes were. The lawyer announced that the master wanted them to continue to work on the estate. As a reward for their service, he was bestowing upon his servants every picture and painting of his son scattered throughout the estate. Each servant would receive one portrait. He also announced that the master had set a schedule when each servant was to leave the estate. At that time, they could choose their favorite portrait and take it with them. There was stunned silence in the room. Some were disheartened, as this was not at all the reward that they were expecting or wanting. During their years of serving, they were not too concerned about pleasing the master or his son. Sure, they put forth some effort, particularly when the son or others were watching, but mostly they spent their time relaxing in the nicer sections of the estate. They and their friends were almost like a little club to themselves. Every once in a while, they'd pool their money and send it to workers in rougher sections of the estate. However, their real passion was enjoying the comforts and luxuries available on the sprawling estate. Among them was Lonnie Smith. As he processed what the lawyer said, he felt dismayed. Lonnie figured when his time came to leave, he picked the smallest and most conveniently carried photo of the master's son he could find. No reason to burden himself with a big frame or a heavy picture. Others at the assembly were surprised and quite happy about this. You see, they loved the artwork of the son around the estate because over time, they had come to deeply love and admire the master's son. Susan Winters had always loved the portrait of the son in the dining room. He looked so courageous in it. Whenever she was working in the dining room, it motivated her to do the best she could. Old Tom Parker thought about the life-size portrait of the son in the grand entryway. When he came to work discouraged, he would often walk past it and stare. The master's son looked so strong in that picture that Tom thought, since he's around here, what do I have to be afraid of? Then there was Rosie Johnson. Rosie worked in a dark corner of the mansion's basement. Her job was doing the laundry. She didn't get out much as the laundry required constant attention. In fact, most people in the estate didn't even recognize her or acknowledge her work. They were glad for the clean towels and linens, but they didn't give much thought to where they came from. Yet Rosie served faithfully year in and year out. When the announcement was made that they would be allowed to take a picture of their choice, she knew immediately which one would be hers. You see, before Rosie came to the master's estate, she had slaved away in the laundry pit at the debtor's prison. She despised everything about being there and hated everyone around her. But one day, the warden came to Rosie and told her that someone cared enough for her to buy her out of the debtor's prison. She was dumbfounded. Who would give money for someone like her? As she stepped out of the dark prison, she met for the first time the master and his son. They hugged her and told her that they loved her and always had. The son said, "I have something very special I want you to do. I want you to use your ability to do laundry and help make our estate beautiful. Will you do this for us?" Rosie would never forget how happy she was to be out of the prison and to be personally serving such a wonderful master and his son. Several years after leaving the debtor's prison and serving in the basement laundry, Rosie discovered in a dark corner of the basement a hidden storage room. Since she was the only one who went down there, she was the only one who knew the treasure she had found there. In that dusty room, Rosie discovered a mirror. At first, she thought it was just a big old dusty mirror and put it away. Years later, she looked at it again. A strange thing was happening. As she saw herself in the mirror, she could just faintly see, almost like a hologram, the subtle image of the master's son in the mirror. It spooked her, and she put it away quickly, thinking she'd never look again. But sometime later, after a very hard thing happened in her life, Rosie went and looked at that mirror again. Strangely, she saw her face, but now even more clearly in her face, she also saw the face of the master's son, similar to how a child can look like her mom and her dad at the same time. Disturbed, she put it away. But over the years, she continued to serve faithfully in that basement laundry. And she would sneak a look at the mirror, and she would see less and less of her reflection and more of the master's son. In fact, it actually looked less like a mirror and more like a portrait of the master's son all the time. She came to love that frame, because the less she saw of herself in it, the more she saw of the son. Time continued to pass. Slowly, workers were called to leave the estate according to the master's schedule. The workers wondered what it was like on the other side of the tall walls. They wished someone who left would shout over the walls and let them know what it was like there, but they never did. Then one day, Susan Winters, Tom Parker, Lonnie Smith, and Rosie Johnson were all summoned to leave the estate at the same time. What are the chances of that, huh? They were told to leave everything behind, select their favorite picture of the master's son, and go to the gate. Like all the others before them, they felt anxiety about what awaited them on the other side of the walls of the estate. Susan rushed to the dining room and carefully removed the courageous painting of the son that had given her courage as well. Tom Parker stood in the vast entry of the mansion and gazed one last time at the life-size portrait. With effort, he took it down and headed for the gate. Lonnie Smith simply dropped his things, picked up the smallest photo of the son he could find as he sauntered toward the exit. And Rosie Johnson tiptoed down the dark steps of the basement one last time. She hoped after all these years, no one had secretly taken the mirror from the hidden closet. She smiled as she found it and looked one last time. By now, there was no reflection of her at all in the frame. The mirror looked entirely like a portrait. She struggled as it was quite large and too big for an old woman, but the adrenaline of being summoned and leaving the estate helped her lug the mirror all the way to the gate. Susan, Tom, Lonnie, and Rosie each took a deep breath and stepped through the door. They were shocked at what they found on the other side. It was another estate. Like the old one, only better. Something strange began to happen with the pictures they held. The larger and heavier the picture was, the larger and heavier it got. The lighter and smaller the picture was, it got even lighter and smaller still. As their eyes adjusted, who was standing before them but their old master and his son? But now they seem so different as well, healthy, vibrant, glowing with energy and joy. The master answered their bewilderment by telling them that no one on the estate dies. They just leave the old one and come to the new one. The next thing that happened was also shocking. The master said, "Bring to me my picture of my son." Susan Winter stepped forward with hers, unsure as to what all this meant. The master looked at the courage picture and said, "I love this picture, and I love that you do too. I will now give to you 1,000 times the weight of this portrait in gold." Susan gasped. It was a very heavy picture, and she was only a laborer after all. "Why are you giving this to me?" she asked. The master said, "I am rewarding you according to your love for my son. In your love for him, you brought a big picture, and great will be your reward." Tom Parker stepped forward with his life-size painting. The master laughed with delight to see it again. "I remember the day I put it in the entry," he said. "I have always loved this picture. Thank you for loving my son and his portrait too." Tom was stunned. The scale reported a gold value he couldn't even calculate. He was filled with joy. Lonnie Smith was excited. Now was his chance. After years of living for comfort on the old estate, he hoped for more of the same in the new. He reached into his pocket and pulled out the wallet-sized photo of the master's son he had brought. The master frowned. There was an awkward silence. Finally, the master said, "Is this all you brought?" "I'm afraid so," Lonnie replied. "But can I still get what Tom got?" The master said, "Like all the others, you will be fully rewarded according to your love for my son. Of course, faithful service on my estate, sacrifices of time and energy, were all designed by me to increase your love for my son. I did this so that when you left, you'd bring a big picture, because I love to give a big reward. But Lonnie, you live for convenience and personal comfort, and they don't produce love for my son. The picture you brought will be the measure of your reward and happiness in the new estate, because here, it's all about him." And he pointed fondly at the son. With his reward in hand, Lonnie stepped into the new estate, fully happy, but with less happiness than Tom and Susan. Finally, Rosie stepped forward. Everyone knows mirrors are heavy, but after stepping through the gate, this mirror weighed more than she could move. It took many others' assistance to put her picture on the scale. As the scale hummed to calculate the weight and reward, the master winked at the son. The son beamed with happiness. When the final tally was announced, you could hear gasps and cheers from all over the estate. Everyone was thrilled for Rosie, but none more than the master and his son. "You have been a good and faithful servant, Rosie. Now great shall be your reward." Rosie didn't know what to say. How could a laundry girl and an ex-con like her be the recipient of so much reward and joy? She finally said, "I have to ask you, over the years, why did the mirror turn into a portrait of the son?" The master's son said, "That's just it, dear one. All the pictures in the estate actually were not pictures at all. They all were mirrors. The more you loved me and served me, the more the mirror looked like a portrait of me. As Susan found her hope in me, the reflection of my courage was seen in the mirror. As Tom found strength in who I was for him in his trial, my strength was portrayed and seen in the mirror. This was even true for Lonnie, only in his case, he allowed so little of who I am to be formed in him. All he could ever see around the estate was little pictures. But you, my good and faithful servant, you have been true to me. Great shall be your reward. Welcome to my eternal kingdom." The end. Now, my thought right now goes to the disciples who, after Jesus told a parable, would often say, "What was that about?" So I don't know if you got the analogy or not, but this is the point. Our lives that we are living today are creating a context for reward and joy in eternity. So what's the point? It's the same point as last week. Don't waste your life. You have one life. You have today. You don't know if you have tomorrow. You can't change what you did this last week. You have one life. Don't waste it on things that don't matter. And there are 1,000 things in this world, many of them good things in and of themselves, but they're not the best things. Give your time and your energy and sacrifice and service for the best things, and do it for Jesus' sake, and great will be your reward. Why? Because great will be our love for Christ. And this is what God is developing in us. Romans 8, He is conforming us to the likeness of His Son so that our lives, like the mirror, are increasingly portraits of who Christ is. And the greater the clarity of that, and the greater the size of that, the greater the reward will be one day. And my dear friend, if you are here and you are in a trial and you're wondering, why is this happening to me? And you resent the fact that it's there, or you resent God, or you resent the person who's in your life, might this not create a change in perspective, a why this is happening, and to see that God is not doing it because He hates you, He is doing it because He loves you, and He wants to give you a big reward. So be faithful in it, and persevere in it, and trust God in it. And those of you that are maybe thinking about getting involved in the kingdom of God work in some way, you want to be involved in a community ministry, or maybe something within our church context, or maybe you just want to go across the street to your neighbor in some kind of act of love and to develop a relationship with him or her, whatever it is, and you're wondering, why should I do that? I don't know. It's so difficult. It's so awkward. Let this be a motivation for doing it. It creates love for Christ. And the more love we have and the greater the resemblance to Christ, the greater our reward will be. It is my heart's desire truly that each of you would receive a great reward and to be commended by the King of Glory, Jesus Himself. Nothing will make me happier, but that is dependent upon how we live today and what kind of church we are and how we love one another and our unity and our witness and our service and our sacrifice. So today is the day to do the things that create the context for joy and happiness someday. And like I began this message, I want to say it to you again. Live today in such a way that when you're dead, you're glad you did. Do it, and great will be your reward.
When we live each day with the perspective of heavenly joy and reward, it changes how we approach everything. You're listening to The Journey with Steve DeWitt and the conclusion of a message titled Eternal Rewards, Living for Maximum Joy. To replay the full message, visit thejourney.fm. Well, we want to take a moment to say thanks to our ministry partners. Your faithful financial support is essential in ensuring that The Journey reaches audiences not only in our backyard of Northwest Indiana, but also nationwide through the Moody Radio Network and leading podcast platforms. As we continue along in our mission to share the gospel with eager listeners around the world, your generous donations ensure our financial stability and allow us to keep going strong. So would you give today to The Journey? Just call 844-7-JOURNEY. That's 844-756-8763. Or make a donation online at thejourney.fm. As a thanks for your gift this month, we'll send you a book called The God Conversation by J.P. Moreland and Tim Muehlhoff. Today's culture is an increasingly story-based culture, but J.P. and Tim help prove in this book that a story-based culture doesn't have to be one without truth. In this excellent resource, you'll learn how to better communicate the great truths about God, the world, our faith, and human nature through stories, modern-day parables, and by listening and teaching like Jesus. It's a must-read for all who want to help others find faith in Jesus Christ. And you can request your copy today by calling 844-7-JOURNEY. That's 844-756-8763. Or visit thejourney.fm. And if you'd like to see Steve DeWitt teach in person, then plan a weekend visit to Bethel Church. We're located in Crown Point, Indiana, with campuses in Cedar Lake and Hobart. Find directions and more at bethelweb.org. Well, I'm Tim Svoboda. Join us next time for more teaching from Pastor Steve DeWitt here on The Journey. Today's program was produced and furnished by Bethel Church in Crown Point, Indiana.